Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/timpool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or call them at 877-646-5347. Again, that's 877-646-5347. Make sure to go to TimCast.com, click Join Us, and become a member to support this podcast and all the work we do, and you'll get access to exclusive uncensored segments from TimCast IRL and way more. Now, let's jump into the first story. 2024 has only just begun, and we're already getting a story about a potential domestic terror attack taking place in upstate New York in Rochester. A car filled with explosives barrels into a crowd, killing two and potentially a third, maybe about to lose their life. It's a horrifying story. And it seems like what happened was an individual who was depressed, it's been reported, was trying to slam into a group of pedestrians. But as they were speeding towards the group, an Uber pulled out and was hit instead. Pedestrians were still hit. And it did result in the death of some individuals. So I want to go through this story because it is big and it may or may not be terror. We don't know for sure. But man, heck of way to kick off 2024. And we are getting warnings up the wazoo. I love it. When, you know, a year or so ago, and I'm being somewhat facetious here, I would talk to people about the black swan event. I never used the phrase black swan event, but like the potential for conflict, crisis, destabilization, and potentially, you know it, civil war. I do love getting credit for the civil war meme. Everyone keeps saying that it's me, and I'll take it, whatever, but I didn't make this idea. I did not one day just decide something like this was happening. I'm just reading the news. And I would say that based on all of these things, it's certainly on the top of mind. As it goes, top of mind. Who said that? Was that like Kamala or something? Someone said top of mind and it was like a big news story. But when you look at this kind of stuff, I don't know that this was political. I'm not saying it was, but you're now seeing, you know, a Putin ally. We got this in Newsweek saying that a civil war would be good. And you have, I mean, if you just look at all of the things that have happened over the past several years that in the history books are indicative of a civil war or some kind of societal collapse, then yeah, it's just not out of the question, which I'm going to go through. But the big news today, outside of this story, of course, is what this leads to. We have many articles warning that 2024 will be the year. I don't know that 2024 will be the year. I don't. And what I mean by that is this the year where everything just falls apart? Maybe. I mean, you could argue 1860 was the year the Civil War actually started in terms of the conflict between states because the secession happened. I think the secession happened in 1860. It may have been January of 1861, but certainly all of this bubbling up, the votes, the process, was the year before the inauguration of Abraham Lincoln. And here we sit. We have this story here from Real Clear Politics. CBS's Catherine Herridge predicts black swan event in 2024, fertile ground for our adversaries. You may have seen this one in the past week. Of course, I was out. I was in Alaska, actually. I went to Utqiagvik. Sorry, I was in Barrow, Alaska. The locals call it Barrow or Utqiagvik. I don't know. I don't really care one way or the other. But we'll get into all this. I have stuff to say about Alaska, too, that has an impact on politics as it pertains to this. But of course, we saw this. Putin ally says U.S. civil war will be good for the world. Unheard. The world should fear 2024. We have this from Finbold. This black swan event could derail the 2024 U.S. elections, warns entrepreneur Gary Cardone. Oh, it's just all piling up, isn't it? We have this story, of course, we covered a while ago. Colonel Douglas McGregor says we'll never get to the 2024 elections. Banks will close. We have similarly from 2021, retired general thinks the U.S. military could back a coup after the 2024 election. Oh, boy. Wow. And the scariest story here, the DOJ says it will sue Texas if they enforce the new law punishing illegal border crossing. This story right here was probably the most worrying to me, which happened over the Christmas holiday break. I hope you all had a Merry Christmas, spent time with your family, and had a happy and had a wonderful New Year's Eve, and have a happy New Year. But this story right here was one of the most worrying. So let's kick off 2024 with a bang. And we have this story. Now, I gave you the gist of this story, and that's really about it. A couple in Uber were killed. The driver is in critical condition. It is believed the man driving this, I believe he was also killed. They say it was loaded with, I believe, gasoline. And it will be an investigation. We don't know for sure if it was domestic terror. But, you know, as I'm getting ready to launch the first segment of 2024, and I see the story, it's just, you know, it's a bit worrying when I see this, that we have such a shocking moment. And it's not the only. I mean, there were some murders that happened on New Year's night, right over the New Year, over New Year's. And it's horrifying. But let's talk about family and where we are this year over last. Last year, as the many years previous, I warned that we're heading towards some kind of civil war. And I'll give a shout out to Dave Smith. He came on the show on Timcast IRL and he said, you know, he wanted to give me credit for something I said on the Joe Rogan experience when I was with Jack Dorsey and Vijay Agade, then, you know, CEO and top legal advisor, head of trust and safety. And he said, at the end of the show, you mentioned that if they keep doing this kind of stuff, there's going to be a civil war. And yeah, at the time, it was laughable. They laughed. They were like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm building a van. Right? At the time, I was building a van. I have the van, by the way. It's got its own electrical system with solar panels and all that stuff. It's been sitting around. I don't want to use it, but I'm glad I have it. And at the time, it was a really silly and stupid thing. And I'm like, look, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm building a bug out van anyway, based on what I'm seeing. Think about where we've gone since then. So when Catherine Herridge on CBS says she fears a black swan event, it could be international conflict. It could be civil war. It could be a combination. These are my opinions based on what we're seeing here. Let me tell you where we're at and the conversations I had, the wonderful conversations I had with family. There are many people that I speak with who I would consider to be normies. That's what we call them, normies. The people who don't really pay attention to politics and don't know what's going on. But it's surprising now how many of these individuals are attuned to the culture wars and the conflict that this country is facing, to the point where a lot of people are asking whether or not there's going to be a 2024 election. It's fascinating. I tweeted out, at what point does Roseanne win her bet with Michael Malice? Michael Malice takes the very broad, let me slow down. There was a bet on Timcast IRL. Roseanne said there won't be an election. Michael laughed and said, of course there will be. And he bet $1,000. Roseanne's already declaring victory. She said, in her view, she's already won the bet. Okay, well, legitimately, we need a judgment call on this one, because the argument we had with Michael Malice was, at what point is it not really an election? And Michael's point is, if there is a vote, no matter who the people are, you had an election. And I'm like, you know, I agree, legalese, lawyer-wise, if that's how he wants to play it, I'll give it to him. If it's Nikki Haley versus Gavin Newsom and people vote, we had an election. But hold on. Does North Korea have elections? Yes, they do. Okay, is that really the position we're taking here? Is that what Roseanne meant? Now, Roseanne may have said something meant more like the military would shut it down and it'd be extreme. I don't know. She didn't say that. But I think it's fair to say that if we get to this point where no one believes the election took place, even if there is some kind of Potemkin vote or show vote, there's no election. Thomas Massey tweeted out warning the states that were pulling Trump off the ballot that the GOP, the House, is going to be the ones that they're going to go through as to whether or not they count these votes. So I give you a scenario for 2025. I don't care who wins 2024 in this scenario, okay? Obviously, I care who wins, but they pull Trump off the ballot. Let's say Joe Biden wins. Let's say there's four or five states where Trump was not on the ballot. Without those states, there is no 270. You need 270 electoral votes to win. Without that, we go to what's called a contingent election, where House delegations will vote for who the president should be. Let's say that there are several states that pulled Trump off, and they likely were going to be Democrat states. Maybe they're not necessarily swing states, but you know, maybe could have been. Maine, perhaps, considering a three-way race with RFK, Joe Biden, and Trump. Stats show that Trump could take Maine. Now, Maine is, it has, as many of you know, unilaterally decided to remove Trump from the ballot. Let's say that come 2025, Congress just says, nope, you removed Trump from the ballot. You didn't have an election. We don't count your votes. And then nothing gets passed on and it's frozen there. Then all of a sudden, our Newsom or Biden or whoever it may be doesn't reach the 270 to win. Contingent election, Donald Trump wins. I don't know. But with Massey pointing out that Congress may reject electoral votes from states that remove Trump from the ballot, that may be what they want. So I'm having these conversations with family about the potential for civil war. And I'm asking some of these people when they're like, you know, a year ago, they're incredulous, but open to the idea, like, I don't know, things are getting crazy. And now we have that time travel test. If you were to go back several years, go back to that Joe Rogan podcast episode and lay out everything that's happened since. My stars and garters, my friends, people would be arguing that I was describing actual civil war. Why? If I said that a dozen men tried to kidnap a Democrat governor. If I said that 1,000+ angry right wingers would storm the Capitol and shut down the vote, you'd laugh.
You're cruising down the highway, windows rolled down, tunes blasting from the radio. You're in the zone and living the dream. Suddenly, your car sputters, coughs, and throws a wrench in your whole day. Tow trucks, repair bills, the dream turns into a nightmare. Don't wait until car trouble steals your peace of mind. Visit CarShield now at carshield.com/Carlson. For nearly 20 years, CarShield has helped millions of drivers avoid the stress of major repairs. They offer plans covering up to 5,000 parts and systems, from your engine and transmission to electronics and more. All for a low monthly rate that fits your budget. CarShield plans also include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, and rental options. Get peace of mind now. Visit CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Join millions of customers and contact CarShield now to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Carlson. That's carshield.com/Carlson. Visit now.
Now, of course, by today's standards, we don't think that there was a plan. I mean, I think if you look over all the facts and evidence, the Whitmer plot was orchestrated by the FBI for the most part. I should say, absolutely, it was. January 6th, of course, was an inside job. That's a fact, not up for debate. And let me stress this again to Reason.com, the ragging on Vivek Ramaswamy. I'd like to stress for all of you, and these are the conversations I'm having with, like, normie family members, extended family, who don't pay attention. I'm like, January 6th was an inside job. And they're like, oh, what? And I'm like, the Capitol Police opened the doors, fanned people in, and took selfies. If that's not an inside job, I don't know what is. And they're like, yeah, but there were people storming their way into the building. Yes, there were. Of course there were. No one's denying that. That absolutely happened. Those rioters should face criminal charges. And then on the other side of the building, you had cops opening the door, removing barricades, fanning people in, and taking selfies with them, and giving guided tours, effectively. Let's drop the language and be as blunt as possible. Several Capitol Police officers escorted the Q shaman through the building to the Senate chambers. Inside job. Because if you want to argue the Capitol Police were overwhelmed and didn't know what to do, they could have at the very least left and not assisted the people walking through the building on January 6th. So when I say something like that, people go, wow. What's happening to this country? Yeah. Catherine Herridge predicted a black swan event. Now, look, she's just a journalist. She's, I think she's fairly good. You know, she exposed a lot of corruption. What does she know? What does she know? She is much in a similar position to I. We both read the news. She does more investigative stuff than I do. I do more surface level commentary and cultural analysis. But yeah. I think it would be absurd to deny the reality that a black swan event is coming in 2024. What does that mean for you? Dude, I don't know. I don't lead your life. I don't live your life. And I don't know what you should do because I don't know what your life is all about. I can tell you this. Stand up for what you believe in. Speak your mind. Be brave, as James O'Keefe says. And hope for the best. Prepare for the worst. I'm certainly preparing for the worst. And it's scary. You guys realize that there are several personalities who have already fled the United States. I'm not exaggerating. There are several personalities for varying degrees of fear have fled the United States. I'm not going to drag anybody or call anybody out. Some just said the financial system is in serious jeopardy. The debt is insane. The unrealized losses are terrifying. And it's time to start investing somewhere else that can be more self-sustaining. Oh, boy. But if the U.S. takes a hit economically, like a bad one, it's going to hit everybody massively. Then there are people who are concerned that they're going to be targeted over January 6th. We're already learning about Steve Baker, a journalist, contributor to TheBlaze.com. They're telling him he's got to turn himself in for overcharges. Taylor Hansen, Tenet Media. We have a show on Tenet Media. Was apparently there were 40 air marshals stalking him over a false investigation. Do you not see what is lying before us? So when I'm talking to people and family members, and this year, it's really interesting because no longer is there doubt. That's the crazy thing. That's probably what scared me the most. I'm hanging out in the suburbs of Chicago with a lot of people who are like, I don't pay attention to too much politics. And then I'm like, you think there's going to be an election? Like, I don't know. And it's, you know, I get asked by one guy and he's like, who do you think's going to win 2024? And I was like, you think someone's going to win 2024? And they laugh because we all get it. In 2016, the Democrats denied the election for years. In fact, many still do deny the 2016 results. We're talking about 8 years ago, 7 years ago, to be fair. They don't believe that Donald Trump actually won. Russian collusion. And we endured that hoax. And, you know, I went along with it. The time I said, well, let's take a look. This is interesting. I spoke with journalists who were like, dude, you got to see the evidence we have. I was like, wow, really? It's hard to believe, isn't it? Then it was all BS. 2020 comes around. Trump supporters don't believe the election was legitimate either. Now, of course, you can take whatever side you want to take in that conflict. Most of us, I think, listening to this show are probably going to believe that there was foul play in 2020 because they wrote an article explaining how they did it with the shadow campaign. I'm not talking about Dominion voting or flipped votes or double counted votes. By all means, you can track those stories and believe whatever you want. I'm saying outright, an article was written in Time magazine called The Shadow Campaign to save the election. We weren't rigging it. We were fortifying it. Okay, that's the lightest form of they rigged the election. And what I mean by this is, look, guys, elections have always been like this, playing dirty as possible to try to win. If you think there's honor and integrity in elections, I got a bridge to sell you. But what do you think is going to come at the end of this year? What do you think is going to come in this year? You think anyone's going to accept the results? So I'm talking to these normie family members, and I was like, you think after 2016 and 2020, after January 6th, after everything you think you know, you've heard in the news, you think 2024 ends amicably? I don't see how. But the reality could be more like the Civil War in 1861. An election happens. Now, a lot of people get this wrong, and I may have gotten it wrong, too, because there's a meme going around that they pulled Abraham Lincoln off the ballot in 1860, 10 Democrat states. It's technically correct, but it's not literally correct. And so I was trying to find data because I kept hearing it being said. Eric Prince said it. It's like 10 states. And I'm like, wow, really? I'm like, if he's saying it, sounds like it must be true. Like everybody's saying it. But I want to do the fact checking. And I read up on it. And it's not how it happened. It used to be back in the day that ballots were issued by parties. And it was basically a ticket saying, y'all want to vote for these guys. And so people could bring these forms and sign it and be like, yeah, I agree. I want to vote for these guys. They did not. It was actually Republicans who did not issue the ballots for Abraham Lincoln in any of these states. Not a single vote for Abraham Lincoln was received in these states. Now, it wasn't because Democrats formally rejected it. It's worse than that. It's because people were scared that if they were seen carrying around a ballot paper issued by the Republican Party at a time near civil war, you'd be mercilessly beaten in the streets. Yeah, maybe a little bit of an exaggeration. But I read a couple different academic articles on how the elections, opinion pieces. And I think it was one academic article that was breaking down the election process of 1860. And once again, the idea was the parties would print their own ballots. You'd go in and you just vote. You'd be like, who should I vote for? And so the parties would say, here's our people that are running. So if you were a Democrat, you'd be like, these are the people we want to vote for. And then they would issue like, and then other candidates, there would be different. It was basically just like advisory. Like, guys, these are people who, because there was no formal public paper saying like, here are the candidates. It was feared. If you were in a Democrat secessionist state, if you were seen carrying a ballot for the Republicans, You'd be shunned, ostracized, you'd be canceled, you could be beaten, you could be attacked. I mean, there was a caning in Congress. It was that extreme. Bleeding Kansas had been going on for 7 years. And so when you have John Brown blasting people in the face, those tensions are extreme. And people are like, I don't want to be seen carrying this vote. So what I read was that Abraham Lincoln didn't get a single vote from a single individual in these 10 Democrat states that eventually went on to secede. Or I'm sorry, in the states that went on to secede, Abraham Lincoln got no votes. You take a look at where we're headed now, and it may be comparable. It may be something like that, but for different reasons. It may be that Donald Trump receives no votes from any of these states because he's not on the ballot. So it's different. And I ask people this, would you call that an election? I mean, Donald Trump's the front runner. Donald Trump is not just the front runner for the Republican Party. He's the front runner for 2024. He is polling in the lead among 18 to 34 year olds. Donald Trump has the youth vote right now. That's insane. Donald Trump, guys, the day after Christmas. We're leaving. I'm leaving the airport in a shuttle. Our shuttle driver is, I would say a young man, but, you know, like not like young, maybe he's in his late 20s. Young black man. And he's like, who are you voting for? And then I was like, all right, he said, who do you want for 2024? And I was like, oh, boy. Well, he's like, just say Trump. And I laughed and I'm like, oh, yeah, no question, Trump. And I'm like, I like Vivek, you know, but I think this is where we're at right now. Trump is the front runner. And I think he's our best path forward. Not that he's perfect, blah, blah, blah. Dude told me a private jet came in from Swift Air. This is what he said. And I don't know if it's true. Had 140 illegal immigrants on it. He said they were told that it was the Blackhawks, that a private jet, a 737, was coming in and that they had to take the bags off and everything and service the plane because it was the Blackhawks. You guys are the Blackhawks, Chicago Blackhawks. These guys, he said, we are so excited. We ride up to service the plane. We open up the cargo and there's three garbage bags. And we're like, what is this? Then we find out all illegal immigrants and we were pissed off. And I asked him, I was like, why did they lie to you, man? And he's like, man, they wanted to get us excited and get us to go work this plane. And I said, is it because you guys would not have done it if they told you you'd be servicing illegal immigrants? He's like, yep. And I was just like, wow, dude. Wow. He said they told him it was the Blackhawks. He's like, bro, these flights are coming in all the time. All the time, every day. Now, a lot of people blame Greg Abbott. They're like, oh, Greg Abbott's doing this, dude. Let me tell you where we're currently at. All right? We got a lot to talk about today. U.S. DOJ says it'll sue Texas if they enforce a new law punishing illegal border crossings. This one was like a punch in the gut when I saw the story. December 28th. I'm on vacation, guys. You know, that last week of the year, we take off. And I'll tell you why. Not because I want to take vacation. I'm not a vacation kind of guy. It's because nobody wants to work. It's not me. I mean, I can't expect anybody to work Christmas Eve, Christmas, or the day after Christmas. It's travel time. And then the last few days, you think anybody wants to leave their family and then fly immediately to D.C. to come on TimCast IRL? Nah, so that week is off. And then it's like, what? New Year's Day? Good luck. That's a bank holiday as it is. So we don't work New Year's Day. But here I am sitting and I see this story and I'm like, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene warns national divorce is coming. And this story, I'll tell you why this story is terrifying. Because it made me realize something as we're talking. There's a question right now of, and it depends on who you are if you want to even ask the question. There's a question of, who's the legitimate government of the United States? Is there a legitimate government? And I'll tell you what this means. Article 4, Section 4, shout out to Josie, the redheaded libertarian. She tweets this out. The Constitution guarantees the states that the federal government will protect them from invasion. On the southern border in Texas, in Arizona, you have these terrifying videos. When I showed this video that Marjorie Taylor Greene posted, when I showed it to normies, they started panicking. I didn't pull this one up. I'm going to pull this video up and I'm going to show you. And it's from like, I got to search. It's a video of thousands of illegal immigrants storming the U.S. border, storming it. And I'm talking to regular people who are like, man, things are getting crazy. And this is why I say the normies are freaking out. Because you watch this video and it looks like we are actually under attack. Actually under attack. Give me a second as I scroll through here and try and find this tweet. Man, when was this? December 28th. There's so much to go through. It's kind of scary. from Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh, I got these really beautiful pictures from Alaska on my Twitter profile. And scrolling down, we got Nikki Haley talking about slavery. We got, what day was this, man? AOC saying there is no invasion. There's no invasion at all. I remember, here's me flying, and we're scrolling down. Give me 2 seconds. I patter my way through trying to find this video, and I found it. Okay, let me pull this video up for you.
Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds in stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com, promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
The Biden administration, here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene says. The Biden administration has created the most dangerous national security crisis in history. They've legalized human trafficking of millions, allowed 1.8 million gotaways, and are harboring illegals. Impeach Mayorkas. Take a look at this video. These people in this video are all walking in large, in the thousands. But it's this video right here that made extended family members panic. Take a look. I'll get the audio on this one. I wasn't planning it, but we'll get the audio on this one. Take a look at this video. Okay, that's not real audio. But as you can see, you've got people. They appear to be crawling under the bollard fencing right here on the right. There's thousands. Thousands of people crawling under the wall, and they're running full speed into the country. Yo, I showed this video to normies, and I could see the panic in their eyes. All of a sudden, the question's like, wait, what is this? What is this? What's going on? And I'm like, this is what's happening at the southern border. But I'll tell you what, my friends, I was in Chicago, and all anybody could talk about, I'm exaggerating, a subject of conversation was, they're building camps in Chicago. There's homeless everywhere. They're cutting benefits. We're paying taxes. This is getting insane. Let's talk about the questions that arise then. If the federal government is not only ignoring the Constitution, but it's violating it with false investigations, trumped up charges, and politicized arrests, it's just not the government. I mean, it's that simple. Who is the legitimate government? I don't know. Now, when you have, this is where the scary question comes into place. When you have armed men who act on the authority of government, so they claim, and they begin arresting people, well, for the most part, we agree. To a matter of to a degree of confidence in the American people, like we recognize who the government is. But when the FBI arrests the former president, when you have in Maine, in Colorado, unilateral removal, I shouldn't say in Colorado, but I don't believe it was legitimate. When you have the removal of the front runner from the election, let me stress something. Donald Trump is the front runner for the entire election. In Maine, the Secretary of State just said, nah, Trump's out. He's gone. That is not a governmental function. That is not a constitutional function. Okay, so they are not the government. But you say, yeah, but they're sitting in the office. Doesn't mean anything. We are a country of the consent of the governed. We agree on who the government is when they act within the confines of the law and our constitutional mandate. If the federal government has begun to act outside of that, then they're just rogue elements claiming they're the government. What makes someone a government actor? They are operating within the constitutional framework. If the federal government has begun arresting innocent people, trumping up charges, well, these are just armed guys locking people in rooms. And this is what I feared would happen. As I said throughout the last year, imagine this scenario. One day you go downstairs, there's a knock on your door, and you look to the people and there's a clown, like a literal clown with makeup and everything. You're like, huh? You say, can I help you? And they go, police, open the door. You go, what? You're not a cop, you're a clown. They're like, no, police, open up now. And then he
puts his hand on his firearm. Then you see three more clowns walk up behind him. You're like, there's three clowns outside my house with guns claiming to be police. These are just clowns. You open the door. They say they got a warrant for your arrest or something. And you're like, guys, you're just three clowns. You're not agents of the government. They claim to be. And then a fight ensues. I say to imagine the scenario because we could all understand the absurdity of a guy in a clown costume claiming to be a cop. You'd be like, dude, I ain't buying it. They show you a warrant and it's got like, you know, daisies on it and it's written in crayon. And you're like, guys, that is a crayon drawing, not a warrant. You wouldn't obey it, right? This is the issue of civil war. This is what people don't understand. Where we are right now and what I fear, the federal government has told Texas, not only will we not enforce the law, we will operate in counterance to the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, abetting an invasion into your state. And if you try and stop us, we will use the weight of government to try and stop you. I saw this story and I said, whoa, wait, hold on. Ninth and 10th Amendment. Texas can do what it must. You can make an argument that international relations, the Mexican border, and these non-citizens don't fall under the protections of the 9th and 10th Amendment because they are not unto the states themselves. It's an operation of the federal government. But when we then get into Article 4, Section 4, the federal government must protect from invasion, and they are abetting the invasion. They're just guys claiming they're the government. This is what I warned about. You are the government when you operate within the Constitution as we have consented to be governed. And many have argued we are now in a post-constitutional country. I disagree. The government of this country is based upon the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. And if someone goes out against it, then they are just a rogue element. If a cop kicked your door without a warrant and shot somebody, and they would arrest the guy. But I'm a cop. No, you're not. Cops have to get warrants to get signed off by judges and operate within the confines of the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, all the amendments. If a soldier kicked your door in and went and slept in your house, he'd get arrested. When the federal government sends agents to abet an invasion, you'd think committing the crime would result in an arrest. But there's no one to arrest them. So what happens when Texas, their law enforcement, looks at a guy in uniform abetting the invasion, and they say, you may as well be a dude in a clown costume trying to claim you have some authority you don't have. Now, it could be as simple as Texas law enforcement says to these quote unquote federal actors, you can't stop us. You guys don't. You're breaking the law. If a cop robs a bank and then claims I was told to do it by the chief of police because the money is evidence, they're going to be like, nice try, buddy. If the chief of police orders police officers to go and rob a bank, they're going to be like, you can't do that. If the federal government instructs its agents to abet an invasion in violation of Article 4, Section 4, at what point does Texas say you are a rogue element, not the government? That terrified me. Because sooner or later, you either get individual citizens just saying outright, you're not law enforcement, you're breaking the law. I brought this up several months ago, before the Texas thing even happened. When they were lifting the barricades, I'm like, federal law enforcement are abetting criminal activity. Criminal. You're allowed to be a refugee in this country, but you have to apply legally. There's a process, a legal process. Entering the country legally is a crime. It's a literal crime. I remember when AOC was talking to, was it Homan? And she was like, legal asylees are not criminals. And he goes, Article Section 3, blah, blah, blah. And he reads off criminal code. And he's like, entering the country illegal is a criminal violation, ma'am. And everybody laughed. It is codified in the law federally. They broke the law. So federal agents are abetting these criminals. We're here. It's happening right now. There is a question of who is the legitimate government already. That's it. I'm sorry. It's true. I'm not saying everybody who works at the federal level is we're questioning. No. Obviously, there are politicians. We know there are elected representatives. I'm saying, who are these quote unquote law enforcement guys breaking the law in brazen plain view? Merrick Garland? It's getting serious, isn't it? I can't tell you what's going to happen because I don't know. All I can do is read the news and make a point about what we're seeing right now. And it's this simple. Let's go back in time. 2019. I'm sitting with Joe Rogan. And instead of saying, if you keep doing what you're doing, y'all are going to see a civil war. And instead I said, where do I see this going? In a few years, a sitting member of Congress will advocate for national divorce, or at least warn that it's imminent. National divorce, the breaking of the union. You will have had in the media the alleged claims or the allegations that several men were attempting to kidnap a Democrat governor. 1,000 plus men will riot in front of the Capitol building trying to storm their way in. And this would temporarily impede the electoral vote count. There would be widespread claims of voter fraud. Imagine if I said that. They'd be like, wow, those are all really specific predictions. And then it all happened. What if I said, several years ago, federal law enforcement agents will begin aiding and abetting 10,000 people plus per day breaking, physically breaking through the U.S. southern border. The DOJ will threaten anyone who tries to stop them. Let me stress that for you again. Go back 7 years and say, several years from now, the Department of Justice, the federal government, will send law enforcement to destroy southern border barriers to aid illegal immigrants to the tune of 10,000 plus per day. Texas will be frantic to stop them deploying their National Guard and their law enforcement. The federal government will then threaten them with legal action for trying to stop what is clearly illegal and unconstitutional actions on the part of the federal government. You'd be like, what? Hey, let's throw in Texas v. Pennsylvania. What if I told you in 2019, in 2 years, at the end of the 2020 election, you're going to have 48 states involved in an original jurisdiction lawsuit to the Supreme Court over questions about the constitutionality of the election itself? Amazing. And think about where history may end up. Maybe tomorrow everything ends. I love saying it. Maybe tomorrow everything stops, it calms down, the election goes off without a hitch, and we're like, wow, we averted the worst. Because I've been saying that over and over again. And why? It's a caveat. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it does. Maybe we chill out. But think about where this all goes, where we are now, and what the next step's going to be. And everyone just keeps saying. In the article from Unheard, "The World Should Fear 2024, they say, Aris Roussinos, Aris, I'm probably pronouncing your name wrong. I actually worked with him. I went on a trip with him in Egypt once. Good dude. Writing for Unheard. He's writing mostly about world conflict, global conflict, but he does mention the state of U.S. internal politics, domestic politics. And he just says everything points towards escalation. I think he actually used the word escalation, both globally and domestically. He says, so endemic has the sense of crisis, both globally and domestically, become that the most dangerous nuclear escalation. That's the wrong part. I think he used, he used escalation several times. Oh, okay, it's like right in the front. Escalation lurks on every battlefield. But he made a point about, here we go. The Gaza war, blah, 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 drives the U.S. to seek a swift resolution of the conflict. The logic of events leads towards escalation. You tell me what's going to happen. I don't care, man. You can laugh and say, Tim Pool, civil war, blah, blah, blah. Dude, say whatever you want. I don't care, dude. I'm buying emergency food. We're preparing for the worst. You do whatever you want, man. 2024, here we go. All right, I'm going to wrap it up there. This is a long segment. We got more to talk about culturally. It's not all bad. Dave Chappelle's new special is out. It's getting rave reviews. The culture war is on in full swing. We're going to get the results. I think Together Again is going to chart pretty well. I think it's going to do pretty well. Ladies and gentlemen, Together Again, the song we put out, already hit the Billboard charts for the week before the launch. So it's looking good. This may be our first single to chart 2 weeks in a row, maybe even three. And, you know, it's not all bad. It's not all bad. We just got to pay attention. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. Dave Chappelle is back, ladies and gentlemen, and he's got this amazing new special called The Dreamer, and there's already several clips going viral. Why? Well, because according to thepinknews.com, Dave Chappelle comes for trans people once again in his new special. He certainly did. And in it, he actually makes the joke that he's not going to go after trans people anymore, but he's going to go after handicapped people because he loves punching down. Dude, Dave Chappelle is absolutely hilarious. And this shows the tremendous cultural victories that we are experiencing as we enter this tumultuous 2024. Now, I know there's a lot of bad news and scary news about the political world, but the reason why I think we are seeing this mass migration, the Biden administration facilitating illegal immigration, this abject corruption is because of the desperation of these political establishment forces, knowing they are losing the culture war. When Donald Trump gets elected, assuming everything goes smoothly, which I don't know will happen, but in the event, I should say this, of a Donald Trump election, he's going to start weeding out these corrupt individuals who are going to scream and cry and claim he's being a dictator because he's getting rid of corruption. Perhaps it's what you need in politics. You need someone who's strong enough to say, y'all broke the law, y'all get arrested. Now, Trump said that in 2015-16 about Hillary Clinton, and he didn't do it. I'm sure he regrets it. But maybe we will see a Trump victory. Maybe not. I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this year. There's so much crazy stuff going on. But I can tell you this. Dave Chappelle's new special exemplifies cultural victories. He's the GOAT. He's one of he's the funniest comedian of our generation, hands down. And he is outright pulling no punches, saying this stuff makes him he breaks down how he feels about it. He's allowed to feel how he wants to feel about it. It's another big story in the news. And this is Green Day. On New Year's Eve, singing in their song, American Idiot, I'm not a part of a MAGA agenda. And everybody's losing their minds. But I really don't care. Apparently, the dude said the same thing in 2019. I'm not a part of a MAGA agenda. And nobody really went crazy over it at that point. And why is it surprising to anybody that an urban liberal establishment plastic personality is going to be an establishment personality? Because I just think it's silly. But I do think there's something important to point out. The song American Idiot by Green Day was their first foray into the Billboard Hot 100. That's why when we release music, I'm so, you know, I don't know, passionate saying like buy the song, support our work, because we want to hit that chart. Because we want to be able to say that we are countering these groups of people. Green Day, big famous band, right? It wasn't until American Idiot they actually got on the Hot 100 charts. That is like the top 100 songs of the week. And they got on it with American Idiot. These guys are as plastic as they come. They don't know or care about politics. They're pandering to a political party, and it worked for them. Well, we're not pandering to anybody in our music. We want to show we are countering that. So we've got news where we're at currently with Together Again. The official numbers should have come out today, but because of the holiday, I think it'll be tomorrow. But we did get the previous week's numbers, and yeah. Charting in two areas already with Together Again. So this was our biggest release. We'll see if Billboard actually calculates it properly. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe we'll crack that as well. I bring that up just to point out our cultural endeavors are succeeding. And Dave Chappelle exemplifies tremendous success holding that line and saying, dude, chill the F out. Here's the story. And I'm using the Pink News, of course, because they're oh so angry. Dave Chappelle has continued to mock trans people in his latest Netflix special, The Dreamer. The Dreamer, which dropped on Sunday, December 31st, focused on the early years of Chappelle's career in entertainment and how he became successful. But the comedian, who has previously been criticized for comments about trans people, quickly moved on to making jokes at the expense of the trans community. Just a few minutes into the show, he told the audience that trans people make him feel as if he has to go along with them. Comparing it to Jim Carrey pretending to be acting as Andy Kaufman. I'm going to play a short snippet of this, not the full thing, just a clip so you can get the general idea for yourself. But here's a tweet from Billboard Chris. Dave Chappelle's new special is out and he's telling the truth. Here's what Dave Chappelle says.
And I didn't understand. And then he came over and he was acting weird. I didn't know he was acting like Andy Kaufman. He's just like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, hello. Andy? Now, in hindsight, how fucking lucky am I that I got to see one of the greatest artists of my time immersed in one of his most challenging processes ever. Very lucky to have seen that. But as it was happening, I was very disappointed. Because I wanted to meet Jim Carrey, and I had to pretend this nigga was Andy Kaufman. All afternoon. And he was clearly Jim Carrey. I could look at him and I could see he was Jim Carrey. Anyway, I say all that to say, that's how trans people make me feel.
Notice the thunderous applause. The audience is clapping and cheering as he breaks all this down, saying, "That's how trans people make me feel." A story about Andy Kaufman. And he was like, "I know it's Jim Carrey." It's interesting. He also makes another point in another clip where he talks about going to jail, which I will play for you now.
God forbid I ever go to jail. But if I do, I hope it's in California. Because as soon as the judge sends me, I'll be like, "Your Honor, before you sentence me, I just went to court to know I identify as a woman. Send me to woman's jail." And as soon as I get in there, you know what I'm gonna be doing? "Give me a fruit cocktail, bitch, before I knock your motherfucking teeth out. I'm a girl just like you, bitch. Come over here and suck this girl dick I got. Don't make me explain myself. I'm a girl."
He can't help himself. He can't. But oh boy, the Pink News is very mad. He went on to say, "If you guys came here to this show tonight thinking that I'm going to make fun of those people again, you've come to the wrong show. I'm not effing with those people anymore. It wasn't worth the trouble. I ain't saying ish about them. Maybe 3 or 4 times tonight, but that's it." Ha ha. "I'm tired of talking about them. And you don't want to know why I'm tired of talking about them? Because these people act like I needed them to be funny. Well, that's ridiculous. I don't need you." Chappelle claimed he had a whole new angle coming because he's now targeting disabled people. "Tonight, I'm doing all handicapped jokes. They're not as organized as the gays, and I love punching down." You know, Dave Chappelle is amazing. Chappelle then returned to his thoughts about the trans community. "To be honest with you, I've been trying to repair my relationship with the transgender community because I don't want them to think I don't like them. You know how I've been repairing it? I wrote a play because I know gays love plays. It's a very sad play. It's moving. It's about a black transgender woman whose pronoun is sadly the N-word. It's a tearjerker. At the end of the play, she dies of loneliness because white liberals don't know how to speak to her." Yo, Dave, what up? "Chappelle has come under fire in recent years. Blah, 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 blah." Listen, man, you got to have a sense of humor about this stuff. All right. And I don't think making jokes about people means you hate them. It doesn't. Dave Chappelle is, you know, look, here's the thing. I don't care if somebody's trans. You know, go live your life, mind your own business. Do whatever you want to do. That's fine. Libertarian. Just keep the stuff. No child sex changes, no kid stuff. Just keep that away from kids. And you could just be like a clown for all I care. But we're not going to do clown education. This is the thing. You know, when they talk about we got to do LGBT education in schools, I'm like, no, we don't. Because we don't have skateboard education in schools. Okay? My point is, your subculture is not something that needs to be in grade school curriculum. Because if we're just going to sit here and be like, I have a lifestyle that should be included in the curriculum, okay, well then how about we do skateboarding? Hey, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. We should have a book on skateboarding. We should give the kids, it should be a mandated thing. No, that's silly. Now, of course, there's gym. And gym's a bunch of different things. They're trying to ban dodgeball everywhere. It's so stupid. My point is this. Here's a group of people who, as adults, choose to live a way they want to live. And then they're demanding that children be educated on this stuff. And I'm like, why? There's a whole bunch of like punk education. Well, that's an identity. The way you dress, the way you feel. We're going to bring these books into schools and make all the kids wear these outfits. No, that's silly. You can come to me if you're an anarchist. Well, get out of here with this stuff. It's your ideology. I don't care. These people want to be put everywhere politically. Now, why is it then that all these big social media companies will ban you if you have a political opinion on a lifestyle? Isn't that just stupid and weird? Dude, imagine if YouTube had a video where it was like, you're not allowed to criticize skateboarders. You'd be like, huh? What are you talking about? I skateboard and I got criticism of skateboarders. Yeah, these young kids, they don't understand. When they're waxing up these ledges and these buildings and skating, they're like, why are they kicking me out? I'm just skating. It's like, dude, it's someone's property of an insurance company that tells them if they don't, they're going to lose their insurance. And it's not about you skateboarding. It's about little old ladies slipping and falling. And if they don't have insurance, they're going to have to pay for that. And if the insurance company finds out they're letting you skate and not trying to stop it, they're going to be like, well, you let people do this. It's not so simple. Skateboarders. But you get my point. What if YouTube was like, oh, you better not say that. You better not. That's ridiculous. But there's one group of people of a particular lifestyle that gets some kind of unilateral protections. Dude, Dave, make fun of whoever you want to make fun of. Okay. So stupid because they're like, civil rights is supposed to be about immutable characteristics. You know what I mean? But certain lifestyle practices are a choice. Certain, you know, like I'm talking about the way you choose to dress in public. Now you can be, it's like, well, but I have this identity and it's true to myself to wear this. I'm like, yeah, and I like wearing a beanie. Imagine if they're like, oh, you can't make fun of Tim for wearing a beanie anymore. It's the stupidest thing. Make fun of me all you want, dude. I don't care. You can make people make fun of me for a lot of things. By all means, welcome to America. Welcome to free speech. But I love it. I love it. Because Dave Chappelle is setting a standard in the culture wars, refusing to back down. This is why I say it's so important to speak up and not just get pushed around, not just bend the knee. Dave Chappelle says, here's how I feel about it. Everyone laughs, thunderous applause, because you're not alone. A lot of people don't like being pushed around by these political zealots. And if somebody is trans, man, go do your thing. But guess what? Dave Chappelle, anybody, you're allowed to make fun of everybody. He even makes fun of, you know, he includes a black woman in there. He's making fun of everybody. Someone who goes by the N-word. And then he makes fun of white liberals. Good. Make fun of people. Mock this. There's an article written by Lectern Guy mocking January 6th. And that's the point. Mockery. But let's talk about the other big cultural news. I love this one. Rolling Stone says Trump supporters have meltdown after Green Day slam MAGA agenda during New Year's show. The band changed the lyrics to their 2004 song American Idiot while performing on ABC's Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve with Ryan Seacrest. Oh, Green Day. I like Green Day when I was 12. I can play a bunch of their songs. It's great. Pop punk. Pop rock. I don't go to Green Day for any, you know, deep philosophical understanding because their songs are all about drinking, doing drugs, and whacking off. I'm not kidding. Like Longview, one of their big songs, is, you know, about cranking it. And then you have Hitchin' a Ride, which is about drinking booze to excess. And a lot of their songs are about depression and teenage angst. And it's just like not all that deep. And so when I was a kid, and I could play these songs, they came out with an album and they had a song like Warning. And it was like very acoustic and they got ragged on for it. There was, I can't remember who said this, but some like punk rocker said they killed punk rock. And that really offended Billy Joe, I guess. So then they decided to do this album, American Idiot, where they're like, we're going to be punk rock and it's a grenade, but it's a heart. And then we're going to call Americans idiots and all that stuff. And to be fair, criticizing the Iraq War was a good thing. But now, because this guy is a vapid establishment celebrity, can I just point out, like, yo, this song is 30, or, I'm sorry, this song is 20 years old. Here's a guy whose heyday was the 90s, who is performing New Year's Eve. Okay, dude. You know, look, man, I got no beef. There's a lot of bands that I like are similar age, who've been around for a long time. I'm just saying, like, this song was written 20 years ago. So it's going to change the lyrics, fine, but it does not make sense anymore. It's an old song for a different era. Using it as a protest song today about a MAGA agenda makes no sense. If the song is supposed to be about propaganda and people being manipulated, that's not the MAGA people. Of course, the left will claim it is because they're quite literally who Billy Joe was criticizing back in the day. The establishment individuals were all aligned and in favor of war. So here's where we are. The reason why I bring this up is, for one, I do think it's stupid. I'm seeing all these tweets from people being like, I can't believe Billy Joe would say this. And I'm like, who cares? It's so stupid. It's the importance of culture, the importance of building culture. Let me explain something for you guys right here. This is American Idiot Wikipedia. I know there's no H in there, but I added the H anyway. Okay, so they say one of the two explicitly political songs on the album, the other was Holiday. American Idiot says that mass media has orchestrated paranoia and idiocy among the public, citing cable news coverage of the Iraq War. Uh-huh. They have these Geraldo-like journalists in the tanks, these soldiers getting play-by-play. He felt that American news crossed the line from journalism to reality TV, showcasing violent footage undercut with advertisements. CNN did that. Remember when it was where was it? Was it Ukraine? The sirens were going off and then it cuts to an Applebee's commercial and everyone started just mocking CNN. Really, Joe, where'd you go? All of a sudden, you're now in defense. He says he went to write the song after hearing Lynyrd Skynyrd's song. That's how I like it. It was like, I'm proud to be a redneck. And I was like, oh, my God, why would you be proud of something like that? It's exactly what I'm against. Look, the like rednecks, a country guy, if you're singing about someone who's proud about chaos, destruction, war, conflict, propaganda, by all means, criticize them. But that's not what redneck means. Redneck just means like backcountry folk or whatever. Whatever you call it, whatever you want to mean, I guess. It typically, the name comes from people who are working, blue collar workers. And so they'd be out in the sun and they would get sunburned and they had rednecks. Isn't that funny? That's what he's against? Yeah, we're not surprised, dude. The song emphasizes strong language, blah, 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 blah. Take a look at this, my friends. Released in 04, the single peaked at 61 on the Billboard Hot 100, becoming Green Day's first Hot 100 chart entry. All of Green Day's other hits had only managed to chart in the Hot 100 airplay or bubbling under Hot 100. That means airplay, it was put on the radio. It wasn't selling. It wasn't getting, at the time, streams didn't really matter. But it was not getting, I want to be careful here, but airplay is play on the radio, meaning people were choosing to play it. There's a difference between that and Hot Demand that really is the big song. They would typically be bubbling under Hot 100, so they got close. However, the appearance of American Idiot in the U.S. singles charts occurred just prior to Billboard's inclusion of internet download purchases into the Hot 100 chart data, which would have made a significant difference in the song's peak had it benefited from the new chart tabulation system. American Idiot became Green Day's first top five single in the U.K., peaking at number three. Well, they just loved making fun of us. But that's the point. American Idiot, mocking the American people, being critical of them. At the time, I totally understand. 20 years ago, the criticism, and it's apt today, of people marching in lockstep with corporate press. That's why it matters so much that we produce culture and we challenge this. They say Weird Al Yankovic made a parody called Canadian Idiot, making fun of Canadians. Aha. People, Ian Winwood of Kerrang said Green Day did for their generation and the country what Sex Pistols did for the UK in 1977 for a nation sick with love for a parasitical royal family. You know, it's kind of sad. I can respect. 2004, they write a song and they're saying this idiot nation controlled by their TV, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, the song doesn't play today. If he was gonna play the song today, he wouldn't be saying MAGA agenda. That's what I mean. Including MAGA agenda in it doesn't play. He should say, I'm not a part of a corporate press agenda. And he could come out and be like, I don't care if you support Trump or Biden or anybody else. Anybody marching in lockstep with a media machine and not paying attention to the world is part of the American Idiot problem. Instead, he's like, Donald Trump is bad. Ooh, we heard that one on CNN a million times. Congratulations, Billy Joe. It's vapid and boring. It's washed up. He could have made it something good. He could have updated, but he did not. And that's why I talk about the importance of the work that we're doing. So the latest data we have so far, we got Together Again. It's a song we put together. It's the cover of the song from Smokey Mike and the God King. And it hit number six on digital sales. Number six. Now, these are the numbers for the week previous, the previous week to our launch, which means the data should be coming out tomorrow. And this could be it. I don't know. Whatever. We hit digital sales and we also hit emerging artists number nine. Take a look at this. Wow. I don't know how that one calculates, but this is the point. Daily Wire is making movies, making shows. What we want in the culture war is to take over. What I see with the Daily Wire, Hollywood retreats, their movies are getting worse and worse. Oh, I just watched the new Hunger Games last night because I'm like, I don't know, we'll check it out. It's on Amazon. And it was awful. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, this is a blockbuster big movie. And it felt like it was a made-for-home movie. I'm not kidding. It's like there's no character development. There's no real story. The movie just starts and we don't care about the characters. Costume design is fairly weak. The editing, the tone, I'm just like, it looks like a college film. It looks like an indie film. I was kind of surprised, to be completely honest. It's not that good. And you got stars in it, but I'm like, wow, man, it really is falling apart. And I see that Daily Wire steps up and starts taking over these spaces. And that's how I've described it. There's this mountaintop where there you got Hollywood on top. They own the top of the mountain. They left. And now there's nobody up there. And the Daily Wire is like, we'll go up there. I'm saying the same thing. Here's the point. When it comes to music, you know, they want to make the argument. This is really funny. We released the song Only Ever Wanted. It was a really big release. And I'm not like we're anywhere near any of the top artists or like The Weeknd or Taylor Swift or anything like that. But for a new emerging artist with a few songs, we do really, really, really well. So far, that means four of five songs have charted on Billboard. And the only song that didn't was the song that we didn't do any marketing for. Well, we released it and I just wanted to see, like, if we just put a song out and did nothing, what do we get? And it's got like like 350 to 400K across all different platforms, 400K plays. Not a whole lot, but a lot for a new band. It's like the fourth song we ever put out. Then we get together again. It's got I think it's got like 9 or 10 million across the board. Different platforms have different plays. And it's probably, I got to be honest, because not only did we promote it, but the Daily Wire also assisted because it's, you know, Jeremy Boring and Michael Knowles' song. That combined promotion, I think, did us really, really well. And it's we've sold the most. We got the most plays. So I think it'll chart the best. And the point is simply this. We're putting out this music and you got these people saying, oh, but, you know, he's just telling his fans to buy it. And I'm like, isn't that what all artists do? They have fans. They buy it. Yeah, but like these are guys who produced music and the music was really good. So their fans wanted to buy their new music. And I'm like, Look, y'all made it political. The left did. And now they're upset that because a culture war space is utilizing the culture war to sell music. That's kind of the point. American Idiot was a song that was purely political to play at politics at the time to generate attention and sales. This is what they did. And it was Green Day's first Hot 100 chart entry. Quite literally, instead of doing a song that was like Warning or whatever, or Brain Stew, they were like, let's do something topical and political about the current state of affairs so that it generates a ton of attention and we hit the charts. Really? Well, we didn't even do that. Together Again is not about any of that. Together Again is just a song about friends, a guy missing his friend and then wanting to be with his friend, whatever. That's the point. And they say, you're getting your fans to buy it. Of course I am. And they did. And that means that we, as a machine, can produce apolitical music and reach the Billboard charts. Unlike Green Day and their MAGA agenda complaints, that's what they had to do to get on the charts. So when they want to say, oh, he's grifting. No, we made mock pop music. It's funny. Genocide, which we released and did chart as well, is political. And you know what's really funny? If you like the original message of American Idiot, listen to the song Genocide that we put out, which mocks the corporate press and the mainstream media and cable TV. And we have a music video for it and did really well. It charted on Billboard. And so we did that. But we had already hit Billboard with two songs, so I didn't really have to do it. This is my point. Green Day, being cheered on for ranting about the MAGA agenda, did exactly what these people are criticizing all these other people like Tom McDonald or me for doing. No. We put out music, and this is the point we're making. We can drive sales. We can build culture. We can take these cultural spaces and put ourselves in them because we have built a parallel economy that has the capability of doing so. Now, how about them apples? Yo, isn't it amazing? Green Day had some of the biggest songs of the 90s, When I Come Around, and they did not break into the top 100 charts. Now, to be fair, neither we haven't either. But they only did it when they got political. It's marketing. They knew what was going on in the public sphere, and they said, we can do it. Bravo, guys. Congratulations. You found a way to sell a product. The reason why these woke people get so mad, here's what I love. When we put out Bright Eyes, it's got, like I said, like 300 to 400 across the board, our smallest release. We made a music video for it. I think it's a good song, rock. And we didn't do a lot of promotion for it. I didn't see anybody whinging. I didn't see any of these leftists coming out and complaining about it. And they didn't say anything. Because you know what it is? This was part of the point. We release a song. Certainly, these top commentators who want to rag on us and lie about us, certainly they could have been like, ha ha, look at this song. It's not doing well at all. Look, his music's bad. They didn't say anything. Why? It's only when we do well. It's only when the songs are charting that they make videos and they say, ha ha, this song is bad. Why? Because the songs are actually popular and they're doing well and they're charting. So we quietly release a song. We do no marketing for it. And they say nothing. And that was the point. They don't care about the music. They care about the fact that we are winning. And that was the experiment. We want to put on music because we like music. We make songs. So I put out a song and nobody bats an eye. We put out Together Again. And what happens? Same old playbook. Our biggest release yet. That's the point, man. Don't fall for their tricks. We're building the parallel economy. We're making the content and we're going to win. I'm going to leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 4 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out and I'll see you all then. So this woman, paints on pants, goes to the gym, gets yelled at, complains about it. She was wearing some kind of bikini bottom. And so a lot of people are saying she's naked. She wasn't naked, but she was still dressed inappropriately for the gym, caused problems, and then complained about it. There's a lot here. Of course, we've been talking about what these women do at gyms for sometime with wearing skin-tight pants that go into their butts. I'm not trying to be cute or make a joke. There's videos of women, they wear pants that are so tight, it's probably really bad for you, but their pants go into their butt crack so it looks like they're not wearing clothes at all. And they allow that. These women then prop cameras up and film themselves, and everyone's like, dude, we know what you're doing. When they put the camera pointed at their asses, they're like, I just want to see what it looks like when I work out. Dude, shut up. And so what happens, you get these viral videos. There's one where this woman is like, you know, she's being rude or whatever. And the guy's like, if you're being rude, you can leave. And she's like, excuse me, like, who are you? And he's like, I work here. You can leave now. And then she's all shocked and offended. So there's two things here. I mean, obviously, we have the story about degeneracy and these scumbag women that go into these gyms and are intentionally trying to shock people and cause problems. But the other component here is why they do it. Because it works. Because social media. Man, social media, I got to say, like, there are limits to technology. I love social media for a variety of reasons. I'm only here because of it. But I understand there's probably got to be rules or something. I don't know. I wouldn't know what to do. Because you have the issue of free speech. And then you have the moral lines people want to place on degenerate behavior. The left thinks it's degenerate to be mean, but only to their political friends. So I discount that instantly. If your argument is you shouldn't be allowed to say hate speech unless you're hate speech in groups I don't like. Yeah, your rules don't make sense. It's your personal BS. If we're saying the rules are like you can't get naked or whatever, then we all agree those are the rules. And I'm fine with that as long as they're applied evenly and we know what the rules are so we know how to navigate the system and engage properly. What we're getting now is these young people, what do? Everything they're doing is basically just shock content to get followers. It's depressing. It really, really is because it works. This chick got 32 million views. To be fair, you know, a lot of people are going to rag on her, but look at Dylan Mulvaney. All the hate Dylan Mulvaney gets, and it's still profitable. Donald Trump has that famous line where he said he was walking down the street. I don't know if he was with Don Jr., Eric, or whoever, but he said he was with his kid, and he points to a homeless guy and says, that homeless guy's got more money than me. And what he meant is a higher net worth. Technically, it wasn't true, but technically it was true. Why? Because Donald Trump has a lot of debt. You take out a loan for $1 million, you buy $1 million house. You now have $1 million house and $1 million in debt. To anybody who doesn't know that, they see you walking around his $1 million house like, that guy must be rich. No, he's worth zero. And then you multiply that to $1 billion. Donald Trump's net worth, of course, is billions of dollars. The point is that, the point Trump was making, is that this homeless guy with no debt and only a little bit of money is net positive. And if you were to subtract all the liabilities from the assets, how much money would Trump really have? At the time, he had more debt than he had assets. Despite the fact he had millions in cash, assets to the tunes of billions, how much debt is the question? So anyway, I digress. Here we are now. Young people know that they can produce this kind of content, it will make money for them, even if it generates hatred for them. Even if it makes them hated among 80%, they'll make money from 10%. Let me show you this, the video here. The woman is clothed, okay? She is clothed. She's wearing a bikini bottom, which some gyms do allow. And everyone got really mad. Here she says, I do have pants on. And the guys...
He's saying you need to leave. He's not.
This is what they look. She tweeted, guy in the gym presses me for wearing painted pants. This was the point. The point was to get a video with 41.3 million views and everyone complaining and raging about it. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It depresses me that this is what young people do. Now, I know older people did stuff. The guys from Jackass, they slammed shopping carts into curbs and they filmed that. Yeah. It's funny. Idiocracy predicted, ow, my balls. Remember that movie where the guys kept getting hit in the balls and that was entertainment? But it's a good point. And Mike Judge got the heart of the issue there, but he missed this big component. This woman intentionally went into a gym with painted on pants to piss people off so that someone would say something, she could film it, and then put it on the internet for clicks. You know, man, it is so depressing. There is a community note. It says, the man in the video is protecting the overall gym etiquette, according to which you should wear clothes suitable for exercise. Wearing unsuitable clothes or none at all is considered to be disrespectful towards the others. It's also a hygiene risk. Yeah. So let me pull up. What do we have here? Gold's Gym, the guide to etiquette. Gold's Gym, Long Branch, New Jersey. It's the Jersey Shore, for those that don't know. And it says, respect the people around you. Be clean and tidy. No one wants to smell your post-workout BO. It's also important to wear proper gym attire. Avoid wearing street clothes or anything that's too revealing. Okay. Guy or woman wants to wear tight pants or whatever to work out easier because you don't want to be obstructed in your movements. It's just totally fine. Shorts, tight clothes. I got no issue with any of that. Baggy clothes, man, you're just fine. Okay, so there are women that are wearing tight pants as they're working out. I really don't care about that. My criticism earlier are the women who are wearing pants that are unhealthy. Like, they're so tight, it's probably constricting blood flow because then the pants are forced into their butts. I'm not being cute. If you watch the video, it's literally like straight up and you can see everything. And they're filming themselves squatting in front of it with their butts. Like, dude, we know what you're doing. Okay, you're not just here to work out. You're making softcore porn. I love it because we just had Calendar Gate this past week where everybody's ragging on Seth Weather's calendar. I don't even want to get into that. But like, you want to talk about making softcore titillating content. This is what they're doing. Now, regular roll yoga pants, fine. I get it, man. People wear tight clothes. Here's a problem. This woman shows up for shock content to offend and insult intentionally with something that is impractical and she should have been kicked out immediately. Why? Okay. You are working out with paint on your legs. The paint will get sweaty. It will run. It will get everywhere. Not allowed. She's in a bikini bottom. Look, I pulled up just a couple gyms and read their rules. I decided on Gold's Gym for the source, and it says don't wear things that are too revealing, because it's like, come on, you're not going to a swimming pool, you're wearing a bikini. Let me give you this story. This is from 2014. This one's funny. From City Life, Philly Mag, man kicked out of gym for wearing Speedo in 2024. 10 years ago. 10 years ago. Isn't that crazy? 2014, 10 years ago. 29-year-old bodybuilder was kicked out for wearing Speedo. He said they could see his bulge. And he's like, well, don't look at it. And they were like, it's too revealing. You got to go. And he's like, yeah, but women can wear bikini bottoms. They were swimming, by the way. This is a pool. And so in this instance, a dude was, he says, it's leaving nothing to the women dress in a way that leaves nothing to the imagination but their skin, color. You mean underneath? Like, what? You can see their skins. I'm not allowed to be myself or what I want to wear. It's ridiculous. It's incredibly sexist. The gym apologized but reiterated their dress code. They say, we have a two-layer house code. Multiple members registered concerns rooted in discomfort. As a result, the decision was reached. So this is 10 years ago. They were saying, yo, you can't dress like this. So this woman, let me tell you what this is about. I don't care if she wants to wear a bikini. I don't care if women want to wear bikinis. I don't even care all that much about, like, in New York, women go topless. It's like most women don't do this. Granted, we got cultural issues, but sure, whatever. My problem here is Gen Z. Not just Gen Z. I mean, everyone's got their issues. Human degenerate attention-seeking behavior. It's vomitous. It sucks. You know, there are people who produce political content who are the exact same thing. Like the, we're waiting right now. Here's why I'm doing this segment. We're waiting right now for the Epstein court case papers to come out, which many expect will have, you know, Bill Clinton's name on it. Some believe that Donald Trump's name will appear in it. This is not the Epstein client list. And you get all these people coming out being like, Epstein list being dropped. Not true. Not true. It's a court paper, a list of associates with Epstein. And I did a segment on it. And I'm like, there's victims involved. There's housekeepers. I think the housekeepers are still culpable because women were being raped there. But sure. The point is, there are people who are making these shock videos where they're titling it in misleading ways to get those clicks. And I'm like, you know what the challenge is? It works. It does. Now, I'll draw a distinction here, because I know there'll be people who criticize me for the titles I use. And I get these people being like, damn, Tim's using clickbait. Let me tell you what clickbait is. Clickbait is a title that lacks information or has misleading information in an effort to get someone to click on it. What do I do? The thumbnails for all my videos are the headline from the news article, and then I try to title it aptly. Not always possible. I think this is an important distinction to make. There is a difference between, sometimes there are stories where it's like Democratic Party official, because not a politician, you can't say Democrat, you can say Democrat maybe, it'll be like a man who votes Democrat consistently and leads an activist organization. It's like, what do you call that, woke activist? Sometimes it's really hard to condense things, and so you'll just say, you know, court rules Trump is off the ballot, comma, is stayed, and you only get 140 characters. So it's like Colorado Supreme Court issues ruling or rules, Donald Trump is no longer, sometimes it doesn't fit. And so I think I can respect that, because I know I do that sometimes, and I'm like, I don't want to be overly critical, because I can't fit the entire important context of, like, sometimes you got to put the word allegation in. Like, even this morning, the first segment with the attack in New York, I'm like, how do I put that this is an attack, but it's believed to be investigated as terror? And the guy likely, it's tough. It is. My point is, when it comes to culture, yo, we got to build something to break away from this. When I saw this, I'm like, dude, used to be music. Music was great. You play a song, and if you were good at the song, you know, this is where I think everything's heading. I was talking to Seamus Coughlin of Freedom Tunes, and we were talking about architecture, how buildings used to be so beautiful. And he was saying that that was the media at the time. The medium for conveying great works and art was, you made a building, you made it look cool, you put gargoyles on it or whatever. Now all the buildings are brutalist because nobody cares about your building. We just need to go inside somewhere. So everything's sterile and boring. Then we had mass media, TV and stuff. And it was to get the great work out there, to get recognition. That's what you had to do. But now all anybody really wants is attention. Because if you can't get attention for what you're doing, it may as well not exist. So what is it? What does it become? Well, there were publicity stunts. You know, there's Green Day, right? They write a bunch of songs. They do pretty well. But then they're like, let's do a political song so we can finally break in the Hot 100. And they do. They make it in the Hot 100. And that's the PR move, right? How can we get attention for the thing? And you know what? If 100 million people hear the song and 99 million people hate it, you still sold 1 million songs. And that makes you $1 million. How about that? And that's where we are now. This young woman has no talent. In this context, I'm saying, like, no talent related to what she's doing here. She just said, how about I make it look like I'm naked? I won't really be naked, but I'll go in, piss everybody off, do nothing of merit, create no great art. There you go. That's where we're at. A lot of people make videos. You know, I watch these videos on YouTube sometimes where I'm like, they'll get a good amount of hits. And they're just, they talk like this. They'll go, so, you know, this woman, like she looks naked, right? And then I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, like, I can't watch this. Maybe people really like to watch that kind of stuff. I can't do it because it's talking too slow. But why does it have as many views as it does? Because the thumbnail is a picture of a woman who looks naked and it says, naked woman in gym, naked woman goes to gym. And you're getting a bunch of headlines right now claiming the woman is naked. Even the New York Post doesn't explain she's wearing pants. Woman ripped for wearing body paint to gym. Why is everyone acting like I was naked? Because they're trying to create the impression with the headline that she was claiming body paint was nudity or was not nudity. Woman ripped for wearing body paint to gym. Why everyone acting like I was naked? The implication here is that she is naked. She painted her legs and her junk and then said, I'm not naked. I'm wearing body paint. When in reality, she's wearing a bikini bottom and painted her legs to make it look like she's wearing pants. Fine. I don't know. Then she did a fake apology. Then she acted like she was so shocked that a guy took issue with it. Yeah. It's all fake across the board. It's all smoke and mirrors. I'm going to let you guys in on a secret. We've done, I don't think we've done any digital marketing for Timcast IRL. We did do billboards. We did New York Times and we did, I think, Chicago. Yeah. Billboard. Chicago's our biggest market, which is really interesting. It's not surprising. I guess I'm from there. And then we did Times Square several times. We spent millions of dollars in marketing. But this is already after the show was successful and we're already making tons of money. We don't do digital marketing to build subscribers or do anything like that. Maybe we should. And I'm considering it now because I think it is one area where we're really lacking. But we've done some. We've done digital marketing for the music stuff, that, you know, for sure. But we haven't done paid marketing. I'm going to let you guys in on a big secret. A lot of the biggest personalities you know, they've got massive subscriber bases. It's paid marketing. Now, I'm not dragging it. Paid marketing is a good and normal thing that you do. Also, some of these big interviews you see, they're paid. Yeah, Timcast IRL does not pay guests. Never. We've reached out to people, you know, mainstream celebrities, people on the right, and we've invited them on the show, like, we'd love to have you. And they came back and said, here's how much I want. And we said, have a nice day. We do not pay people to appear on Timcast IRL. We may, when we do live events, because that's a stage event. So that's different, but we still haven't done that either. A lot of these big shows, they'll just reach out to someone and say, we want you to come on the show and we'll interview. And they say, not interested. They'll say, we'll give you X amount of money. We won't do that. Look, that's a moral question, and some people are for it. And I don't know if there's anything wrong with it necessarily. We just don't do it. There are a lot of shows that appear really, really big, and it's because they have clever paid marketing positions. And I think the reality is Timcast would be substantially bigger and possibly, like, we're the biggest live show in our time slot on YouTube. There's other live shows that get big, but for consistency, we tend to be the biggest live show. The only other shows that are bigger than us in terms of live are like the VTubers. But you do have other streamers, live streamers, who get more concurrent views than we do. They don't stream as often. And so, and I'm not saying we're the biggest show, period, for our slot. We're typically number one on YouTube when we're streaming. If we did paid marketing, we'd probably be the biggest. And I'm like, maybe that was just what we need to do. Part of it to me feels like smoke and mirrors. You buy the ads to generate the attention, and it's not organic attention, but maybe it doesn't matter because marketing has always been. I guess the issue for me is too much purism, you know? All of this stuff that was built was all word of mouth, and that's typically how podcasts grow. And I'm like, maybe we need to start doing that legitimate paid advertising and actually just push our way into these markets if we're going to really compete. But I guess I'll leave it at that, right? I look at these stories, they bum me out. It is what it is. A younger generation that just wants to do shot content. This is why we got to build culture. That's why I think it's so important to make music, to make video games, to make movies, to make art. I'm going to leave it there. Weird segment length. Usually I do like 10 or 20 minutes, but we'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at, what are we talking about? 6 p.m. on this channel, and we'll see you all then. MAGA prophet predicts overthrow of U.S. government. That proves it. It proves nothing, but sure. It's a funny headline, but there are interesting things going on. You know, we can mock the idea of the MAGA prophet, and a lot of people are going to cringe and be like, sure, whatever, overthrow the government. But you do have establishment political forces saying the same thing. So why did I start this video off by saying MAGA prophet? I'm hoping that enough of these establishment individuals saw the segment and then laughed at the MAGA prophet saying overthrow the U.S. government, so that I can then point out that Alyssa Farah Griffin and Cassidy Hutchinson and Sarah Matthews have all basically said the exact same thing. So call the person the MAGA prophet, call him whatever you want. But his opinion, it's being espoused by your media darlings. So, but we will get started with the MAGA prophet to see what they may have heard. Pastor Julie Green, a self-proclaimed prophet, known for her allegiance to the MAGA movement, has predicted the overthrow of the U.S. government. In her latest video posted by Ron Filipkowski, see, this is what I love. This guy, Ron Filipkowski, who is always being like, these MAGA guys are crazy. Y'all are saying the exact same thing, dude. Posted the video saying, my children, the time has come. The time that you've been waiting for. A reinstatement, a shift of power, a new government in control. An overthrow and a takeover in this nation from the hands of the wicked to the hands of the righteous. Sure. She prophesizes a significant upheaval, suggesting a coup is about to be disrupted and annihilated, with those involved exposed and removed. Her prediction for 2024 is dramatic, hinting at an event that will shake you loose from the chains that bind you. The proclamation continues. Green's pattern of intertwining spiritual prophecy with political commentary. Blah, 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 blah. We get it. But hold on there a minute. From SCNR.com, SCNR. End of American democracy as we know it. Former Trump staffers warn of second presidential term. He knows how to use government better this time. Yeah, we're counting on that, by the way. The women. Former Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Matthews, former Special Assistant Cassidy Hutchinson, and former White House Communications Director Alyssa Farah Griffin sat with ABC's Jonathan Carlin, detailed their experience during the Capitol riot, blah, blah, blah. There's critical parts of history the public would not know. if not for Hutchinson's testimony, according to Griffin, who is now a co-host on ABC's The View.
Hold on.
Was she the lady that claimed Donald Trump phase shifted through the protective barrier to grab the steering wheel? She didn't literally say phase shifted, but was she the lady? I could be wrong, but I believe Cassidy Hutchinson. Let me just. I want to make sure I get this right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She's the one who said in 2022 that Trump lunged at Secret Service agents to grab the steering wheel on January 6th. Here it is. Here it is. Former Meadows aide Cassidy Hutchinson said that Trump tried to do this. Okay. The vehicle Trump was riding in has a barrier between the driver and, you know, where the president is for security reasons, which means if Donald Trump lunged, perhaps she meant that he Looney Tunes-esque bashed his face into the wall. Or he phase shifted. Do you know what that means? It means he vibrated his hand so perfectly like the Flash that he moved through solid matter. Yeah. Or she lied.
Yeah, you pick.
Other senior officials witnessed but did not come forward. Blah, 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 blah. Matthews testified before the committee. Said she resigned from her position, blah, 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 blah. I don't say that. She says a second Trump term could fundamentally mean the end of American democracy as we know it. That's true, because we're not a democracy. What y'all need to understand about the end of American democracy is that it would be a good thing. A good thing. Let me explain. The woke, they're the multicultural democracy faction. We are the constitutional republicanist faction. It's funny how that works. Democrats versus Republicans, huh? Republicanism is not the Republican Party. Democracy is not the Democratic Party. But American democracy is this idea that majority controls everything. That's not what this country has ever been. We have that famous line. Democracy is two wolves and a lamb deciding on what's for lunch. A republic is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. And it's more than that. You know, a lot of people oversimplify it to mean that if you're armed, you can reject the vote of the people. No, it's that when the people vote to kill you, you can protect yourself because, you know, they shouldn't. And so here we are. Democracy, as we know it, we see this is the problem we've fallen into for quite some time. Those of us that believe in America, have American flags, fly the American flags, believe in this country. We kept hearing these people say it's the end of democracy. Donald Trump is the end of democracy. Let me explain this in a way that would simplify things. Okay, so imagine you are a planet called the Galactic Federal Headquarters, and it's 100% human beings of all different backgrounds, founded and established in the year 2250. Trust me, this is a simple way of explaining it. One day, a parasitic slime crash lands on the Galactic Federation homeworld and begins spreading. And spreading and spreading. And then when the slime is infecting and taking over people's brains, the people of the planet are like, hey, we're under attack. The slime monster people go, if they win, it will be the end of slime monsters. You see the point I'm trying to make here? Maybe that's a little too complicated. My point is, we're not a democracy. We've never been. The founding fathers rejected democracy. The woke cultists have been infecting and taking over institutions and then saying democracy over and over and over again until you started to believe the zombies were the actual government. So when the zombies are saying to you, if Donald Trump wins, zombies will be destroyed. I go, okay. When they say it's the end of our democracy, I'm like, yeah, okay, it is. Because I'm not all about democracy, never have been. And then they feign this shocked face. You oppose democracy? Yes, always. Democracy was never a good thing. We are a constitutional republic with democratically elected representatives. And there are problems there, too. Don't get me wrong. But this government created by the founding fathers is actually quite brilliant with three branches. You got the people's branch, the House. You got the state's branch, the Senate. You got the Council of Elders, Supreme Court. And you got the executive, the king, and they're chosen by vote. Supreme Court is appointed and then confirmed by the other branches. This is brilliant. Never were we a nation of pure democracy. We were a union of states. that agree to participate and share values. But my friends, Nikki Haley was asked a question. She was asked a question. What was the cause of the Civil War? And she gave probably the stupidest answer. I mean, I shouldn't say the stupidest because there's real stupid answers. I mean, you could be like, the aliens were stealing moon cheese. Okay, that's dumb. We get it. We get it. But in the realm of actual historical context, she gave a really dumb answer. She's like, the government was trying. She does this thing where she talks through her teeth without moving her teeth. The government was trying. I don't know how she does it. Take away our freedoms or whatever. Something like that. Okay. Let's talk about the Civil War. What was the cause of the Civil War? Slavery? Next question. I know there's a lot of people who are like, no, Tib, you're completely wrong. The cause of the Civil War was insert a whole bunch of other issues that were grains of sand in the bigger picture. The cause of the war was very, very simply slavery. Why? There were new territories that were to be expanded, that were being to be admitted into the Union. And there was a question of whether or not they would allow slavery. So Bleeding Kansas is a fight between abolitionist and slave pro-slavery forces. Abraham Lincoln's like, we will not allow the expansion of slavery. At the time, I believe only 5% of Americans owned slaves. And so with this issue, there were many southern states that believed if Abraham Lincoln was elected, he would ban all slavery, and that would decimate the southern economy, which was dependent on this labor. In fact, I learned this a couple years ago. I was talking about how the cotton gin technology was doing away with it. It was actually wrong. The cotton gin actually expanded slavery. The cotton gin allowed for the utilization of cotton that typically was not used because it had clumps of seeds in it. And so then they needed more labor. Actually made slavery worse. How about that? Slavery, whether or not it would survive the 1860 election, was at issue. And before Abraham Lincoln even was inaugurated, seven states seceded because they believed he was going to abolish slavery, which he ended up doing in a variety, sort of. The 14th Amendment, it was the amendments that did away with it. Constitution and stuff like that. But yeah. So were there no slavery in this country? There's no Civil War. That's it. Now, Nikki Haley said it was about government taking freedoms. There are other ways to describe this. With the issue of slavery at hand, you could argue that was the cause of secession. And then I'm going to be like, don't get so reductive. The core issue of slavery created very serious tensions in this country, which resulted in secession and then conflict between the Union and the new Confederacy of States. You can argue that the reason the South was fighting was not slavery. The South, I'll put it this way. While slavery was an issue, the Southern states seceding resulted in the Union occupying Fort Sumter and refusing to leave. So what started the war? Oh, it was Union occupation of Southern states, right? The point is this. The ideological catalyst, of course, was the issue of slavery. But why did it come to fighting? You can argue, well, because of slavery, the states seceded. Because they seceded, the Union said, we're not backing off. But there you go. Fighting didn't need to start at any one of these points. Why did the war begin? Because Union soldiers refused to leave Fort Sumter. And then the South repelled Union forces that were trying to quash the rebellion. The big question being for many of these people, did they have a right to secede from a Union? And once they started feeling like they were locked in and they couldn't leave, that's when you kind of want to go. So there's a lot of ways to describe what led to it. And then the question is, why did the South fight it? It wasn't slavery. Your average Confederate soldier was not fighting for slavery. That being said, the military leaders did, and political leaders absolutely were in this for slavery. They wrote down in their own constitution, their articles or whatever they were called, that they wanted slavery. But for your average person fighting, they were fighting for their homes because Union soldiers were coming in and trying to take over their governments. There you go. This is where we are today. Something similar is happening. Before the Civil War, there was a belief that we were not a country, but a union of states. They would say the United States are. Now they say the United States, they would say the United States is. It became one country. A dramatic cultural shift due to war. We could be facing that right now. The question is, who wins? If democracy, which has been expanding rapidly in the past few decades and taking over this country, succeeds, it will be the norm. They'll say this is the way it's always been. We've always been a democracy. There'll be no electoral college. Everything will be ruled upon by majority, and there will be serious oppression. Because you have to understand this. The reason why democracy is so bad. You think You think, maybe not you, but the average person thinks democracy means 51% of people will be in control of everything. Wrong! It means that probably like 3% will be in control of everything. And you may be saying, but no, it's not democracy, Tim, you're wrong. No, it's true. I'll explain. It comes to a vote. How many of you would like to have pizza for dinner? You've got 20 people. 11 say, we would like to have pizza for dinner. The other 9 say, ah, gee golly, I guess we have to have pizza because democracy rules. Now you may be saying, but see, that's how it works. The majority will decide. And then someone says, and what shall we drink with our pizza? Uh-oh. 9 of the people who voted for pizza say hot tea. 9 of the people who voted against, the 9 people who voted against pizza say Coca-Cola. You now have 2 people who get to decide what they will end up drinking with the food. Now it's going to be tea or Coke. And it could be neither. My point is this. If you have 1 million factions of people, the idea that 600,000 of them are going to agree 100% everything. The reality is that when it comes to votes on a bunch of different issues, people have different views. So while 11 people out of 20 may say yes to pizza, only 10 of them may actually say yes to Coca-Cola. In which case, they say, wait, I don't want to eat pizza with hot tea. And then what happens? Nobody's happy. But there's one guy who's really like, I wanted pizza and hot tea. This is perfect for me. And then everyone's complaining, like, how did it end up this way? Because there's different issues to be voted on. This is one of the problems with democracy people don't talk about. Sure, it's bad when 51% oppress 49%. But what happens when there's 100 issues to be voted on? The size of the flag. What's for dinner? What's for breakfast? What's for lunch? How big's the house? And no one agrees 100%. So you'll end up with a multitude of factions forming coalitions, and you get something really broken and weird, where you end up having pepperoni pizza with Earl Grey hot instead of, I don't know, like water or iced tea. You'll end up with someone being like, let's try a better one. What do we want for dessert? Ice cream? 11 out of 10 say yes to ice cream. And then they say, okay, and what should we put on our ice cream? Well, guess what? The other people who didn't want to have ice cream, you know, they wanted to have port wine with mixed veggies. A light, they wouldn't call it dessert, but you know, maybe they wanted to have a port wine. Okay, well, we're pouring the port wine into the ice cream. That's democracy. Or you're drinking it with ice cream, which is not so bad. My point is, not everyone's going to agree. 51% will not agree on everything. There will be a multitude of factions. And ultimately what happens is, how many people get exactly what they want in democracy? 2 or 3%. One guy who likes putting spinach in his ice cream and pouring wine over it while eating pepperoni pizza making a cone with pepperoni pizza. That's the one guy. And everyone else is like, how did we get to this point? The majority of people don't like this. I'll give you a better example. Now that I'll get away from the stupid analogies. I'll give you the example of Egypt. When they were voting for a politician, you had 10 political factions, and they all voted democracy. So it doesn't always work perfectly. The largest voting faction, around 20% was Muslim Brotherhood. So they got a Muslim Brotherhood president, and people were upset about it. They didn't want that. But guess what? They were all split into different factions. So they had another revolution. And when the same thing happened, they were like, nah, military came in and just got rid of them. That's the problem with democracy. This is what y'all need to understand about where we're headed. The end of American democracy as we know it? Whatever, man. There are these zombie swamp monster cultists who are scared that we're purging them because we will restore the American Constitutional Republic. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up tonight at 8 p.m. over at youtube.com/TimcastIRL. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all then.